Welcome to Lickin' On Leadership.
The purpose of this program is to bring to you interviews with industry leaders.
A weekly podcast bringing you leaders of the real estate and mortgage industry.
And I can't think of anyone better to join me in this role of providing this co-hosting role than one of the top leaders in our industry, and that's Mark Jones of AmeriFirst Mortgage Banking Group.
And here's the host of Lickin' On Leadership, David Lickin and Mark Jones.
Joe, I really enjoyed that interview we did a while back, a number of months back. But so much has changed in our industry since we recorded that interview. Give us your perspective on the markets as we see them today and recording this actually on Election Day. How appropriate to have a former head of Ginnie Mae on Election Day. We're actually recording this, your comments. Talk about what you see has changed in the market.
First of all, I think the change is dramatic. Not that I believe interest rates are high, because, you know, I was doing business in the early 80s when mortgage rates were in the teens, high teens. So mortgage rate of 5% doesn't do anything to me other than the fact that it just changes the way I think about something. When I look at what's happened in the last few months, and I relate it back to the last few decades where, you know, the industry has basically been in a rate and term environment, I look at the leadership around the industry and say, you know what, have you really prepared for the inevitable? And the inevitable has always been that rates will rise someday. And what I find is that, you know, there's a funny thing, David, that I've always noted about the mortgage bankers. They're either too busy or they're too sad. And, you know, I think that's very appropriate today, because they don't look out and ask themselves daily the what ifs. Certain things happen. How am I going to address this? How am I going to prepare for the future? What happens if things change? We've had some compression in the bond market on premiums. That has had an impact. We've had compression on earnings because of inordinate cost of compliance. There's all kind of pressures associated with the mortgage industry on these companies. And you have to ask yourself, has the leadership in these organizations spent enough time looking forward, asking themselves the what ifs, so I can prepare my organization for any change that may in fact occur? And unequivocally across the board, I haven't seen that.
Just a moment ago, you said there's sadness, but not necessarily forward thinking. One thing is to deal with an emotion. One thing is to be proactive about what are you going to do about that, what you're feeling. And there's the emotions that people feel, and the facts that they're observing is usually the emotions are a result of the facts that they're observing. What do you think lenders need to do today? I mean, it's facing the facts, but that brings about the emotion and usually can be paralyzing or result in them not doing what they need to do. How would you advise someone like that?
You know, again, every leader in business has to understand that everybody around them is looking at them. You know, they're looking at them for the solution. They're looking at them for the leadership. They're looking at them as, am I going to have my job tomorrow? Can I feed my family? They're looking at them. And they're not spending their time researching, inquiring. I mean, just for an example, you know, we both belong to the Ainsworth Group, which is a group of incredible experienced individuals who've spent a lifetime in this industry, who have probably seen every issue that you can possibly see, every market condition. These guys are experienced individuals who are willing to spend their time to bring their knowledge and their capability and their suggestions to the marketplace. I mean, so are folks looking out and saying, oh, geez, I can't afford that. You can't afford not to do that. Right. So, you know, it's about, you know, there's always been a big difference in my mind with leaders saying to themselves, am I making an investment or is this an expense? And from my perspective, you're making an investment in your future when you're looking out trying to figure out what you need to do to continue down that path going forward to be able to understand really what's going on in the marketplace, and do I have the capability to make the change, and bringing some of the gray hair into my operation to help me understand what's going on and maybe help me find solutions for tomorrow. I think that's really what I'm not seeing in the marketplace right now.
That's a really good point. And I think a lot of people struggle with making an investment, but leaders don't. And this podcast, what we're recording this for, is the Lickin' On Leadership podcast. I guess it's almost a rhetorical question, you know, why do leaders not invest at these kind of times? I guess the question needs to be asked. Love to hear your response.
Well, I think because they move into a survival mode, you know, they move into that sad mode. They get emotional instead of being focused and having the discipline to say, okay, there's change happening. How am I going to adjust to the change? And ultimately, anticipate the change rather than react to the change. And I think that's what we're trying to see right now, is folks trying to react to it. When I hear that a lot of mortgage bankers are thinking about moving from being a mortgage banker to being a broker, well, that to me is a reaction to what's going on rather than anticipating and what needs to be done. So when I see this in the marketplace, and I'm sure in your business you see this all the time today,
Absolutely.
I just think that we have to define what leadership really is. And when you have an organization and you have the responsibility of that organization, you have the responsibility of all those folks for the organization and what happens to it. I mean, it's nice to say I'm the CEO, but there's a lot of responsibility and accountability that comes along with that. And if you're going to take on that position, you got to be willing to do what you got to do.
Good example of that was when you were at Ginnie Mae, as you heard earlier, as we talked about earlier in that first interview, you faced some significant challenges at that particular time when you were at Ginnie Mae, and you looked, rather than emotionally responding to the circumstances, go back and talk and recant that a bit and tell us what was going on in your mind. You had to go find liquidity and you ended up going overseas. Talk about those moments. Well, if we could get inside your head, what was going on?
Well, survival. I mean, we got thrown into it in 2008. We didn't have a choice. I mean, the folks at Ginnie Mae and I knew that industry depended on the liquidity capabilities of the Ginnie Mae bonds because the conventional markets were in turmoil and ultimately became, you know, fractured whenever Fannie and Freddie went into conservatorship. So everybody was looking at the Ginnie Mae and, you know, Ginnie going from 7, 8, 9 billion a month to 75 billion a month in bonds, the domestic markets didn't have it. So we had to look elsewhere. I would like to sit here and tell you that I take credit for all that. But the fact of the matter is, I was just a vehicle to get it done. The people at Ginnie Mae, that small crew of people, we gathered together and we spent time figuring out what needed to be done. And I will give them all the credit in the world for being as dedicated as they were in a time of crisis. I mean, I think that's what you do when you're a leader. You bring your people together. You talk to your people. You get insight from your people. You ask them for their support and their help. And then you go out and you're the tip of the spear. You go out and get it done. And you have them supporting everything you're trying to get done. And ultimately, for, you know, we were fortunate. It got done. And I didn't realize until after it was all over how much it meant to the industry at that time. I can't thank the people there enough for making that happen.
Well, I think you go to another aspect of leadership. There are those that are leaders that are out there. They carry the president's title or they carry the ultimate responsibility, however that title might be. And there are those quiet leaders inside of the organization. You talked about, and we both know who some of those people are at Ginnie Mae, dedicated public servants that are not needing the limelight. Talk about some of them, because I think that probably is where we find the greatest number of leaders in organizations.
Oh, yeah. When you walk in to head up a government agency like that, the people will look at you and go, well, you're going to be here for a short period of time. I really don't have to listen to you. I mean, you have to you have to understand that that really happened. You, as the leader at the time, approaches the industry, approaches those people, and, you know, sitting down with them and asking for their assistance, giving me your suggestions. We had some great people. Now, a lot of them folks have now retired, but, you know, they had 30, 40 years of experience in that environment, and they knew. And, you know, when you sit back and reflect on it, very few times were they ever asked for their input. That kind of took me by surprise because these folks had a lot of knowledge. You know, when you ask them for their input, they are more than happy to assist, to give you their input. Now, the one thing nice about asking for input, you don't always have to use it. But the mere fact that you've asked for it means an awful lot to folks. So I think that was the difference of me saying to them, look, you know, we've got a problem here. How do we solve this problem? And you got to remember, we only had 69 people in that agency, and we weren't allowed to spend another nickel to hire anybody else in the 2 years I was at Ginnie Mae during this crisis. So those folks really had to step up and really work hard. And you know what? They did, and I commend them for it. They certainly made me look good, but the fact of the matter is I give them all the credit in the world for what they did during that very, very difficult time of 2008 and 2009.
You talk about Ainsworth Advisors. It's something that we're both a part of. It's a service. Talk about what this group of individuals can bring, other than just gray hair and a lot of experience. Looking forward into the circumstances that the industry is facing, what things can this group do in your mind?
Well, first of all, the group of people that we're associated with, and these folks aren't doing it for the financial gain. These folks, they don't need the financial gain. They're doing it because they love the industry. They want to see the industry continue. They want to see it succeed. They want to be able to reach out and they want to help and provide guidance, if you will. I really think that having this group of people, and I really enjoy getting together with them every couple weeks and having discussions on the industry and what we think we can do for the industry to help it during this crisis. And right now, We are in a crisis mode because we're in a situation where, you know, rates are up, people are struggling, they don't know what to do. They, you know, purchase isn't easy to get into. So they're struggling right now to figure out what the heck they need to do to get done. And I think that these guys at Ainsworth, our compatriots at Ainsworth, getting together and saying, look, we'll give you our time and our knowledge and our expertise to help you on any of the subject matter, whether you got margin compression issues, whether you're trying to transition from one product line to another product line, whether there are compliance issues, whatever it may be, our comrades at Ainsworth, they've seen it all. And
that's
they
right.
can be of great assistance on any level with folks in the industry because we love the industry. We've been doing it, you know, I'm in my 47th year. We wouldn't do it if we didn't love it, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think the other thing that you bring out, which is really important, is that when you were at Ginnie Mae, you went to those that were experts in Ginnie Mae that had been there for a long time. So it was almost like the reverse. You went to the experts. Now, the experts happened to be inside of Ginnie Mae at that time, but it was the key to your success, actually the key to the housing finance system surviving, was the wisdom that came from those that have been doing it a long, long time. And I think it's very true that those that are going to succeed need to draw on the experience of those that have been there and possibly been down that very path, or at least have the wisdom of knowing that. We've often heard in leadership, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Comment on that. Is that a truism or is it a combination?
No, I think it's a truism. I think it's, I mean, my whole career has been based off of who I knew, who I could go to, who I could get guidance from, you know, who I could ask for their thoughts and opinions. I mean, I think it's about who you know, and not necessarily for your personal gain, but just for insight and guidance, because we don't have all the answers. I mean, you don't get into this business and start out having all the answers. So you have to find your way around and knowing the people that you can go to, but more importantly, knowing the people that are willing to help you. And that was really key to my success. It was certainly in any endeavor that I undertook, it was knowing who I could pick up the phone or talk to or get guidance from. And I still do that today. And I've been doing this for, like I said, almost 47 years. I go to people for their insight. And I think that's the difference. I think our leadership today in the mortgage bankers need to understand that it's necessary to reach out. It's necessary for them to say, I don't have all the answers, but I need to find people that can help me understand what I need to do. There's no shame in doing that. That's good leadership.
Yeah.
Like I said, you either are a leader or you're not a leader, and you have to decide that you are or you're not, and that's critical.
Yeah, it's so important. It's great comments in addition to what we already previously recorded. Joe, I want to say thank you so much. As we wrap this up, any final thoughts you'd have for our listeners on leadership?
Well, all I can tell you is this, that we've been around through many, many cycles. This too shall pass.
Yeah.
That's a favorite line from my mother-in-law, who I love dearly, and she's right. That wisdom from that 95-year-old lady is very true. This too shall pass. And if that's the case, don't be afraid to get out there. Don't bury your head in the sand. Don't cower in the corner. Get out there, face it, do what you have to do, and you'll find that the sun will come up tomorrow and everything will be okay again.
That's good wisdom and great thoughts on leadership. Thank you so much, Joe, for taking time to be with me and sharing this wisdom with our audience. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, David. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Lickin' on Leadership, a weekly podcast about leaders in the mortgage industry. Tune in next week, and thanks for listening.